Well, I'd like to begin by thanking Ken for organizing Ambleside 2 and inviting all my friends in, and me, of course, to this grand party we're going to have. Okay, so I'm going to talk about just one theorem, which I copied from elsewhere, as I'll mention in a moment. So two definitions first, which probably everybody knows, but a Lie ideal in an operator algebra is a subspace with the property that if an element in the subspace and an element in the algebra, then the commutator is in the subspace. So it's closed under the Lie bracket. And L is similarity invariant, second definition. Well, that'll mean that if X is in L and if T is in A and invertible, so both T and T inverse are in A, then the similarity transform T inverse XT is in L. So to rephrase this, subspace is a Lie ideal if it's closed under the action of all inner derivations, and it's similarity invariant or conjugation invariant if it's closed under the action of all inner automorphisms. And these two concepts are connected and, for all I know, always the same, and the theorem that I'm going to talk about today, which I can put up now, gives a context, one context in which they're the same. So if A is a triangular subalgebra, of an AFC star algebra, with the diagonal of the triangular subalgebra a canonical massa, in the C star algebra, and if L is a closed subspace of A, then L is a Lie ideal if and only if L is similarity invariant. Let's see if we can. That up and leave it up there. Okay, the impetus for this, for my interest in this, was some while back, earlier this year, I was reading a paper by Laurent Marcoux and Ahmed Sarour, one which has just appeared very recently in the journal, I think, of the London Math Society this year. And in that paper, they have, amongst other things, this theorem in the context of a direct limit of full upper triangular matrix algebras, finite dimensional matrix algebras. So this is a TUHF subalgebra strongly maximal in factors. That's only a small portion of the paper, and the bulk of the paper is devoted to a similar theorem in the nest algebra context for weakly closed subspaces. But When I looked at this section, I couldn't help thinking that it ought to work in the AF context, not the UHF context. And it should, you should, you know, certainly shouldn't be in factors, even in the UHF, but it works in AF. And it turns out, with a little more thought off and on, that the strong maximality was irrelevant. And the trick was, of course, to ignore their proof, mostly, and come up with an easier proof, which I think I've done. Well, at least it seems easier to me. History of the subject, well, it goes back to about 1955 when Herstein wrote a paper on Lee and Jordan structure in something like simple associative rings back in 1955 in the American Journal of Mathematics. And then in the intervening time, a number of people, including Fong and Hudson and Marcoux and Myers and Murphy and Serrure, that's in alphabetical order, in various combinations, I think they also form a connected group of co-authors, just for the papers on various aspects of looking at the structure of Lie ideals and getting this theorem. And the way to do this is to go through the structure of a Lie ideal. Half of the work is already done. There's a result, it's quoted in the paper that I mentioned by Marcoux and Serrure. There's a result of copying, old result necessarily, which says that in a Banach algebra, in a Banach algebra, if L is similarity invariant or unitary invariant, then that implies L is a Lie ideal. And, well, if you take A in the algebra self-adjoint, this is really easy, so we can just put it up. If you take A self-adjoint and then form the one-parameter group of unitaries e to the ita and conjugate x in one order or the other, well, that's going to still be an L by the similarity invariant construction, if that is with X and L, and then differentiate at t equals 0, and when you write it down, what's going to pop out is the commutator will be in L. So, what? You don't. If you want unitaries. But it's enough, because if you have A self-adjoint, then, I mean, if all you knew is that self-adjoint's here, well, then you know it's true for all A. It's linear.
You're in an
unfair what? Oh, right, okay. Well, I'm not. I mean, this my mind is not in an arbitrary Banach algebra. For our context, yeah, Gary?
It's probably obvious. I want to check this out. The other direction is always true, right?
The other direction? If the other direction is always true, if there's a short proof for the other direction, we can stop now and we don't have to. We have to. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, and I haven't seen in the literature a short proof in the other direction. And if there were a short proof in the other direction, I would be talking about something else. And if there is one that somebody knows, we can have the rest of the hour free. What? I don't know in general. content. Now, I mean, it is true, as I just mentioned, like in nest algebras, it's true what in B of H. Ask Laurent or Ahmed, they know only other places where it's true. No, I don't know. I don't. This is, I'm not... Okay, rings where it fails. Okay. This is a little bit of a diversion. I was reading their paper and I got, you know, distracted from what else I was doing, and it's kind of fun. But I sort of have skimmed through the literature without absorbing it all. Okay. I'm going to spend a while now talking about the finite dimensional situation. And certainly, like for all finite dimensional nest algebras, this is all known. I'm going to talk about finite dimensional triangular here, probably in the literature somewhere. I don't know if it is exactly. And digraph algebras, probably possibly in the literature, maybe in some paper by some algebraist that under entirely different language. But in any event, I'm going to use that finite dimensional situation, and it sort of shows very clearly what's going on. It's easier to look at. So we'll do that first. So we'll begin with finite dimensional triangular. So let's just say T has the following form. It's just going to be a matrix algebra whose intersection with adjoint is a massa. So choosing matrix units suitably, you can get it in the form of arbitrary entries down the diagonal, zeros below, and either zeros or arbitrary entries in each location above in some pattern that gives you an algebra. So I'm not talking maximal triangular, but just triangular. And because what I'm going to do for the AF case is use groupoid techniques, so we're going to use coordinates here phrased to look like groupoids. So for the triangular algebra T, we'll let a Roman T be the set of coordinate pairs ij such that xij is not zero for some x in T. So it's the ij's where you can have a star in the pattern. And let S be the ij's in T with I unequal to J. So I will be smaller than J, and D will be the diagonal. It's the set of all II. And let's see. Go over here. So what are some Lie ideals? Well, if K is an ordinary ideal, I'll use the word associative, try always to use associative, is an associative ideal, then it's necessarily a Lie ideal. And the ones that turn out to be relevant are the K's such that K intersect script S, where script S corresponds to this capital S here. It's all the strictly upper triangular matrices in the algebra. I want K contained in script S. Okay, has no diagonal part. So that is a Lie ideal, and is the smallest Lie ideal L such that L meet S is K. That's evident. Now let's get some more Lie ideals related to K. Let's let E be the set of D in the diagonal, all the diagonal matrices with spectrum cap D, such that DII is equal to DJJ whenever the pair IJ belongs to S but not to K. What is capital K? I'm going to start using the language of spectrum, the coordinates on which K is supported. So K is the set of IJ such that XIJ is not zero for some X in the ideal K. So we have this constraint that if IJ is a coordinate where there are, where the algebra is supported, but not the Lie, not the ideal, the associative ideal K, then we have the constraint that any D in E must have those two diagonal entries the same. And then E plus K will turn out to be a Lie ideal in T. Let's see, what does one have to show? Well, we'd have to show that anything in E plus K, D plus Y, well, if EIJ are the matrix units in T, it's enough to use the matrix units in T. We have to show that this is in L, but I'm going to erase the Y because we know the commutator of anything with an element of K is in K again. So we have to show that D EIJ is in, not L, but is in E plus K for any matrix unit EIJ. Okay, if I equals J, this is trivial. They're both diagonal, they commute. If IJ belongs to the spectrum for K, this is trivial. These IJs, these are exactly the IJs such that the matrix unit EIJ is in K. So the matrix unit is in K, so the commutator is in K. So that leaves IJ in the support for T, the upper triangular part of the support, but not in K. So here, of course, is where this will kick in. If we look at DEIJ, what are we going to get when you compute it out? Well, you get DII EIJ minus DJJ EIJ. So that'll be zero, so it's okay. So now you see where, why that constraint. And if F is any subspace of E. Then F plus E is the Lie ideal. E plus K is the largest Lie ideal, whose intersection with the strictly upper triangulars is K. As you vary F through all the subspaces of E, it's the same argument, of course, you go through all the Lie ideals whose intersection with the upper triangulars is K. Excuse me? I mean F, right. This doesn't make any sense at all. A is most certainly not. What? At this point, so far I've just said K is an ideal, so it yeah. But that comes in at the next stage. I've described for you a lot of Lie ideals. And it really is a lot of Lie, you know, a lot in the sense that I've actually described for you all the Lie ideals in the upper triangular algebra. So if L is a Lie ideal in a finite dimensional triangular algebra, then L meet S is an associative ideal. So this is what you had in mind, Dave. And so it's more than a bimodule. And L has the form F plus K, where K is L meet S, and F is a subspace of the E that's defined by the K. Okay, there are various things to prove there, but I'm not going to go through the details of those. This is the key fact, is proving that L meet S is an associative ideal. So let's we have, what is this? Now the theorem will follow from this description, and let's take a look at that, because basically the proof in the finite dimensional case just gets injected into the proof in the AF case. So we can look at it right now. So we have L a Lie ideal in T, and we want to show that L is similarity invariant. Okay, well, L is has the form F plus K. So if we let D plus X be in F plus K, let's write it that way. If we let D plus X be in F plus K and let T be invertible in the triangular algebra, we need to show that T inverse D plus X T is in F plus K. Well, first off, the X part, the X is in K. So it's clear that when T conjugates X, we stay in K. So we don't need to worry about that. We need to worry about the D part. Now, T itself we can write as a diagonal, but I use the letter D. Okay, so let's write it as, I'll just use a delta. Maybe that's not a good choice. All right, let's say E times 1 plus N. Write T as E times 1 plus N, where E is a diagonal invertible matrix, and N is nilpotent. So that we can do easily enough. And then we can conjugate separately by E and 1 plus N. Now, E inverse DE will just be D because they're commuting. So we're left with 1 plus N D 1 plus N. And N is nilpotent. I'm going to write it down with order of nilpotence 3 or 2. I can't remember. Which is the order of nilpotence? The highest non-zero power or the first zero power? The first zero? Anyway, let's just write it down with N equal 3. And then, you know, the general proof will be obvious. Just, you know, just take 3 arbitrarily large. So this is going to be equal to 1 minus n plus n squared d 1 plus n. And that's, we get d minus nd plus n squared d using the 1 over there. And then the same 3 terms and the n here, we get dn minus ndn plus n squared dn. And this is equal to d plus, or minus the commutator of n and d, plus n times the commutator of n and d, minus n squared times the commutator of n and d. So here is the point where n cubed equals 0 kicks in. And what do we have? D is in E. D started out in our Lie ideal. So nd belongs to the Lie ideal. But it's off diagonal because any commutator has 0 entries down the diagonal. So ND belongs to the K part. And K is an ideal, associative ideal. So when we multiply by N or N squared as we might need to, N to any power times ND is in K. So this is in E plus K. That's the Lie ideal. So there's the similarity invariance. Okay. I was going to write down what the description is in a digraph algebra, because I felt confident that I had maybe enough material to fill up 30 minutes. altogether. So we've already used about 30 minutes. So I will, I'll pass over that, but if anybody is curious, if you just ask me, I'll show you in more detail. We have the afternoons. It is, just say a word about it. You have to operate by blocks. A digraph algebra is block, upper, triangle, and you do the same sort of thing, but you have to operate by blocks, and then that condition gets roughly replaced by the block parts when you're in the equivalent of the S minus K, corresponding to a block that's in the algebra but not the ideal part. That gets replaced by the compression to the diagonal block is scalar, and the two scalars are equal. And then at the subspace portion, wherever it's disappeared, the arbitrary subspace of E, that gets replaced by when the constraints kick in, yeah, they're there and you have scalars with equal scalars. When the constraints don't kick in, the compression to a block could it be a full block matrix algebra or the trace zeros or the scalars or zero? Because in a matrix, full matrix algebra, those are the four possible Lie ideals, and compression to those blocks are always Lie ideals within the blocks. So they're not within the Lie ideal. All right, so enough said about that. So we'll move over to A will be a triangular subalgebra of an A F C star algebra, which I won't give a special name, just C star of A. With canonical massa D as diagonal. And so one of the main tools in proving the theorem in this context is to use the groupoid techniques of coordinatization. Let's just briefly sketch out what that is. Probably virtually everybody is familiar with it. X will be the spectrum of D, so D is isomorphic to C of X. That's a zero-dimensional compact Hausdorff space. And any normalizing partial isometry in the C star algebra, so that means V star, V star VD is contained in D and the other way around. By conjugation gives you a partial transformation on D, and so induces a partial homeomorphism from X to X, and we let G be the union of all such of the graphs. Of all such partial homeomorphisms. So this is an equivalence relation on X. And it's topologized so that each such graph is open and, as it turns out, closed. Indeed, compact. Okay. And it's a groupoid in which the inverse of a related pair is just the pair in the other order, the flip, and two elements of the groupoid XY and WZ are composable exactly when Y equals W, and then XY composed with YZ is just XC. Now, if we take A, let's see. Well, what I want to point out is that the C star algebra is a groupoid C star algebra constructed from this AF groupoid. And it's constructed by taking the compactly supported functions on G and defining a suitable multiplication, which I'll put up in a moment, and a suitable C star norm. And there is a very handy lemma in Renaud's book on groupoid C star algebras. The soup norm of those functions is dominated by the C star norm. It's even dominated by the reduced C star norm. And that means that any bimodule, any element of the C star algebra can be viewed as a function in the continuous functions on the groupoid vanishing at infinity. Now you have to be careful. Not every continuous function that vanishes at infinity corresponds to an element in the C star algebra. So you don't know which functions vanishing at infinity are in the C star algebra, but you can write everything down as functions, and then you can write down things that look very, very much matrix-like. Remember that? Okay, so the multiplication in the C star algebra, now viewing the elements as continuous functions on the groupoid vanishing at zero, then the product FG at XY will be a sum, F at XU, G at UY. It looks just like matrix multiplication. The U's, I'll just say it, the U's are running through the orbit of X, the equivalence class of X, which is the same as the equivalence class of Y, because you couldn't be defining them. XY wouldn't be in the groupoid if they weren't in the same equivalence class. And that's a countable set. When you're restricting to compactly supported functions, these are finite sums. In general, for C-naught functions, they wouldn't be finite. But for the ones that show up in the C-star algebra, they will necessarily be convergent sums. Okay, now if if C is a bimodule over D, C in the C star algebra, and if we then define, well, capital C to be the set of points in the groupoid such that f of xy is not zero for some f belonging to C, so I'm going to call this the spectrum of C, and this will be an open subset of the groupoid, and then C itself will turn out to be all f such that f is supported on the spectrum of C. This is the spectral theorem for bimodules, Muley and Solel. And so in particular, we will have the spectrum of the algebra A. This was also used by Steve Power, originally called fundamental relation. And Steve showed that it's a complete isomorphism invariant for triangular subalgebras of AF, C star algebras. We'll have D, the spectrum of the diagonal, which is just the set of all XX. Usually, that's identified with X itself, but that's not particularly convenient to do here, so I won't. And okay. I am running a bit short of time, so I'm gonna So if we look at this multiplication with F and G in A, then we must have XU in the spectrum of A and UY in the spectrum of A. And that puts some special constraints on U. In particular, since A is triangular, the intersection of A with its flip is just going to be D. So if say G is in So what I want to say here is if we evaluate FG at a diagonal point in the spectrum, then the result will just be F of XX, G of XX, because you can't go from X to U and then U back to X if U is not X. So there's only one term in that sum. And then do the same thing with GF. So we see that any commutator vanishes on D. And also, if G, say, is in the diagonal, FG at XY is just F at XY, G at YY, and GF at XY is F at XX, G at YY.
over here.
What? What did I write?
G at x, y.
Okay, so let's let S be the set of x, y in A in the spectrum for the algebra such that x is unequal to y. So that's the spectrum for it's the spectrum for a strictly upper triangular bimodule. And I'm going to have to cut this a bit short, so that will do that. Let K in A be an associative ideal with K meet D containing just zero. So K is contained in S. And then define E sub K to be the set of functions in the diagonal. One more bit. Capital K is the spectrum of this off-diagonal ideal. So we take now for E sub K all the functions F in D. They're on the diagonal, so that F of XX equals G of YY whenever XY is in the upper triangular part of the support of the algebra, but not in the support of the ideal. So it's just like the matrix constraint. Yeah. And let F be any subspace of E sub K. Then F plus K is a Lie ideal in A. All right, I was going to show that. You take commutators, you can do it with matrix units from a presentation, and this condition shows that the commutators, you only have to worry about the F part, the commutators actually lie again in F plus K. If L is any Lie ideal at all, closed, then L meet S define K to be L meet S then this satisfies the fact that K is contained in L, needs a bit of proof, and K is an associative ideal. And that needs a fair amount of proof. Excuse me? Oh, yeah, let me. Okay, that doesn't need. Yeah. What am I thinking? Yeah. All right.
The hazards of rushing. Okay, what it does take a fair amount of proof to show that K is an associative ideal. And then you can show that K meet D is contained in the E set, it's a subspace of the E set for K. Let's call that F. And so that L has the form F plus K. In other words, these are all the Lie ideals. And then the final bit is to use this form. Basically, whenever that theorem that Lie ideal implies similarity invariant is proven, it's normally done by looking at the structure of a Lie ideal. And I have more information here than I think that Laurent and Ahmed had in their TUHF case. There's a little more detail here about the structure of the Lie ideal. But in any event, you go and you basically just imitate the finite dimensional proof, which means you take an invertible and take advantage of the fact you have a presentation. The invertibles are an open set, and the union of the finite dimensional subalgebras is dense, so you can approximate the invertible with an invertible in a finite dimensional algebra. And then basically, with a little bit of jiggling, you can use the finite dimensional result with basically the same argument. So I guess what I originally thought to say was not going to take half an hour, but 2 hours, as usual. I'll stop here.